welcome to a special episode of Care Experts, featuring the best of Dr. West. We've put together the most popular and talked about episodes featuring board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Justin West. We'll be covering liposuction, tummy tucks, rhinoplasty, and breast augmentation. Let's get started. So let's get right into it. What exactly is liposuction?
Super easy. It's removal of fat. We make small incisions. We put a very small, it looks like a metal straw called a cannula, and we use a negative pressure to suck fat out.
Interesting. And so what is the most common place in the body that someone would opt to get liposuction?
The belly. Yeah, I mean, we can treat a large swath of the body, but by far the most common thing, people come in, they pinch their belly, say, I hate this, and we take care of it.
Are there different procedures, or does the procedure vary based on where on the body you're going to have this done?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think that part of it is the part of the body that a large part of it is the skin quality. So places like the belly, if you've got great skin quality, can be a fantastic site. If you've got really loose skin, a lot of stretch marks, it doesn't work. You can get the fat out, but the result isn't always as good because you don't get the elastic recoil. Areas like the flanks and the back typically respond in everybody because you don't see a lot of stretch marks in those areas. The skin's really thick, so you get really good recoil. What you just don't want is to deflate somebody and have the skin sit there looking loose and wrinkly. You want it to kind of, the skin to follow and shrink wrap really nicely to that sort of new body that you've created.
So I guess this kind of answers my next question, which is who is a good candidate for a liposuction? So someone with really good skin quality, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the best candidates are patients who really shouldn't be having liposuction. It's like 20-year-olds who can take care of things by themselves, right? Because they have amazing skin quality that we all sort of miss having. But they would respond really well because that thick skin that with no stretch marks recoils beautifully. You get into your 30s, your 40s, the elastin in your skin starts to break down. And so a lot of parts of your body aren't going to be necessarily as good of a candidate down the road. So again, back and flanks tends to persist for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Almost any age patient's going to respond really well to that. The best candidates are, if we forget about the age, areas of the body that have very few stretch marks, that have a decent amount of pinchable fat, we can almost always find a treatment plan for.
And does the patient need to lose weight before they opt for liposuction?
That's a good question. I think that the way I think about it is, in an ideal world, I tend to like to operate on people when they're at their fighting weight. I want them to be weight stable because I want to know what we're working on. I don't like working on a moving target because if you come to me 60 pounds overweight and then we do our procedure and then you lose more weight, I can't really sort of take full responsibility for what that end result looks like. So in general, for most of what we do, we like patients to be at a very stable weight.
And now, how long does liposuction last? Is it permanent? I'm sure a lot of people want to know about that.
Really common question. So people will say, well, if you suction my belly, is it true that the fat's going to build up somewhere else on my body? The argument I would use against that most of us in this day and age know of, look at the show The Biggest Loser. Mm-hmm. Patients can lose 200 pounds, and if they stick to a regimen, 6 years later, they can still be that size patient that they've become. With fat, we are physically removing fat cells, right? So let's take the belly. You take out, let's say, we called it 100 cells of fat from your belly. As long as you don't change weight, that fat doesn't go anywhere else. But if you gain weight, what happens is you haven't removed, let's say, fat cells from your arms. You've removed half of the fat here. Well, when the fat starts to double in size as you gain weight, you're just going to disproportionately see it grow in those areas that you haven't removed it from in the past. So it is not true that you take out fat in one area and it magically has to appear somewhere else. Fat only appears, if you're taking in more calories and it gets stored as fat than you're burning. So, but the other areas, untreated areas, just have more capacity to grow.
Yeah. Now let's hear what Dr. West has to say about tummy tucks. So tell me, what exactly is a full tummy tuck?
So there's a few key components to it. So number one, it's the removal of extra skin in the lower part of the belly. It's the tissue that typically hangs out over somebody's pants that they don't like the way it looks on their profile. Mm-hmm. And then it's repairing the muscle. So when patients, either from weight changes, from pregnancy, from a whole host of reasons, they'll stretch out. If their belly gets full for any given reason, it will stretch the muscles apart. So tummy tuck is also about putting those muscles back together, and that really helps to improve your profile. And then for most patients, it also is going to involve some amount of liposuction. I always remind patients, we're not two-dimensional structures. We're 3D humans, which means that if we just tighten the front, we're going to have these sort of wings that stick out from the side. So very few people are very fit everywhere but here, right?
Yeah.
So we're flattening the front, putting the muscle back together, taking out the extra skin, and then creating this waistline so that people can redevelop that hourglass.
So who exactly would be a good candidate for a full tummy tuck?
Patients who have enough extra skin. So people who have skin laxity that usually goes up above the level of the belly button. So people who have, like, let's say a little extra skin roll, a little bit of laxity, we have to be able to pull that skin from above the belly button all the way down. Some people just have really minimal looseness that's below the belly button. So that would be transitioning from, let's say, full tummy tuck to more of a mini tummy tuck. And that's kind of like the key difference there is, where is that laxity? Okay. How much laxity do they have?
That was my next question. Yeah. So basically the difference between a full and mini is how much extra skin
do you have? Yeah, it's not a matter of people coming and say, well, I want a small scar, so I want to have a mini, or I want to pay for a small version of a big procedure.
Yeah.
Really, it's there's specific procedures that are designed to get out certain amounts of skin excess. And if you have a small amount of skin excess, it's a mini. If it's more substantial, which is for most of our patients, mm-hmm. it ends up being a full.
And what would the recovery time be? I'm sure people are really curious to know, like, is there things they're not going to be able to do? Can they go to work? So kind of walk me through that process.
Sure, yeah. Well, so tummy tuck is one of the bigger procedures that we do. Mm-hmm. So it is one where patients tend to take off more time. So in general, what I recommend for most of our patients is take off 2 weeks if you can. 3 weeks would be great, and 4 would be totally luxurious. I think for some patients, I'll never forget a patient once when I was in New York. We did her case on a Monday. It was breast surgery, tummy tuck, liposuction. And she, every Friday night, went to the same salsa dancing lesson. And I told her, you can't do that for 4 to 6 weeks. And I did the surgery on Monday. 4 nights later, she went, and she came in and admitted it the following week. And she thought it was hysterical, and she felt fantastic. And I thought, okay, I've never seen anybody recover that quickly.
Wow.
So some people have these amazing quick recoveries where nothing hurts. And they look at us like, why do people complain about this?
Yeah.
And then there's the more average patient who says, you know what, that kind of hurts a little bit. I see why you told me to take off time. But 2 weeks for tummy tucks for most patients is sufficient.
Okay.
In terms of other modifications, we ask people not to go to the gym for about 6 weeks. What you don't want to do is bear down where you're trying to lift something, whether it's, you know, we're not operating your arms, but when you go to lift something, you're engaging your core.
Yeah.
So anytime you engage your core, you're threatening the repair that we do. So we ask people to really, we want you walking every day, but we don't want you really engaging in anything that looks like exercise.
Got it. So it sounds like about 2 to 3 weeks on average.
Yeah, for most patients.
And is there any kind of scarring or scars that they should be aware of that they might have?
There are scars, right? So it is surgery. Every surgery is going to be associated with a scar, but it comes down to scar placement. So a lot of our patients who come in, let's say after pregnancy, they've delivered 1, 2, or 3 children, whatever the case may be, they'll have the separation of the muscles, they'll have extra skin. And for a lot of those patients, they'll have a C-section scar. So I would say most of our patients can sort of relate to that scar because they've seen it on themselves or they've seen it on a friend. Low scar that's hidden pretty well that doesn't show in most clothes, right? Because the OBs do a really good job hiding that scar low. For assuming it's a pretty typical C-section scar, we try to make the incision that we place at that same level or even below. So it's a really low place scar. And then we just tell patients, you know, depending on how you dress, most of your clothes will hide it. You know, if you wear underpants or bathing suits, little strings on the side, that's going to be hard to hide anything but, let's say, the best scar.
Yeah.
But most of our patients, you know, have an easy time finding clothes that hide the vast majority of the scars that we use.
Now, here's Dr. West on rhinoplasty.
So first of all, tell me, what exactly is a rhinoplasty?
Rhinoplasty, think of it as shaping your nose. So somebody comes in and they don't like the tip of their nose, or they think their nose is too long or too wide. There's a variety of procedures that we can do, hundreds of little maneuvers in this very small space to reshape a nose to make it either more proportionate or more shapely to hit the aesthetic standard the patient's looking for.
Can you walk us through the procedure just briefly, what that would entail?
Sure, yeah. So in a typical rhinoplasty, what we're gonna do is we're gonna open the nose in one of two ways. Either we do what we call an open rhinoplasty, where we make a little incision down at the bottom, and then we'll actually lift very gently the skin off of the structures of the nose, so lift it off of the bone and cartilage, and then we're just making little manipulations to the cartilages and to the bone that make up the architecture of your nose, and then we put the skin back together. The scars are really subtle. You can also do what we call a closed rhinoplasty, where we make the incisions inside the nose, and you're still making incisions, but they're particularly well hidden. But the truth is the scars are so small from an open rhinoplasty, it really kind of comes down to dealer's choice. Some surgeons are trained a certain way. I always tell patients, let them use the approach that they do best.
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily, there's some maneuvers that might be easier one way or the other, but for the most part, let the surgeon approach your nose how they like to do it.
And what is the recovery like? Is it painful, or is there any like problems breathing afterwards?
Yeah, so depending on what we're doing, if we're doing anything with the septum, we often put in little packs so that we can mitigate bleeding issues after surgery. Those packs could stay anywhere from 3 to 5 days. a little bit of discomfort when those come out, but really at the end of the day, not such a big deal. People are bruised, they're swollen. Sometimes you get swelling and bruising that extends out to the cheeks. And so there's kind of, you know, you will look like you had surgery, right? You are going to walk out with a splint on your face.
Yeah.
This isn't the kind of thing that you hide under a t-shirt and nobody knows what you're just doing in that surgeon's office, right? You go out looking like you just had a procedure. The splints usually stay on anywhere from 5 to 7 days. And, you know, so a lot of people don't want to go to the supermarket or go out or see their neighbors. So for some people, it's hiding in their, you know, hiding at home for a week.
Yeah.
And then by the time the splint comes off, now you don't have that telltale sign of the splint being present, but there's still often swelling and bruising. But there's also products that we can use to help mitigate that. So there's plenty of patients who will go out the day after surgery because they just don't care. Mm-hmm. Some people it's a week later, some people maybe more like 2 weeks.
Talk to me about scarring. Like, I know this is right on your face. So is the scar going to be evident? Do they heal over time?
These are really subtle scars. So, you know, if you're doing a closed approach and you're making incisions inside the nostril, no one's going to see that but your plastic surgeon, because very few people look inside your nostril.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right. The external scars that we use, we do it down on the columella, which is the lower part of your nose. So if you have somebody shorter than you who's looking up and staring at your nose, which would be kind of a weird thing to do, they could theoretically see the scar, but they're typically very hard scars to find even for us. So, you know, when I talk to people socially, I don't typically look at them and say, oh, you got a rhinoplasty, because based on their scar, you might see a nose that just seems almost too perfect and say, I wonder if that was, is that yours or did you have surgery?
Yeah.
Finally, here's Dr. West's insights on breast augmentation.
So can you first tell me, what is a breast augmentation?
Breast augmentation is the placement of breast implants. That could be saline implants, it could be silicone implants, but that's the idea, is putting breast implants into somebody for enhancement.
So how is this different than a breast lift?
Breast lift is basically rearranging tissue. So somebody will come in, maybe they like the way their breasts look in a bra, but when they unhook their bra and their breasts drop, they're in a position they don't like.
Okay.
And so they're wanting to restore a more youthful look. So in those situations, we're basically just taking existing tissue, the volume that they have, and rearranging it to a higher position as opposed to adding volume through an implant.
So what are the benefits of breast augmentation? I guess you kind of answered that question a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think that from a, you know, patient's point of view, the questions they ask or the pain points that they express, you know, the anxiety that they express about, you know, what's bothering them leading up to a consultation, it tends to focus honestly on how they fit into clothes. For the vast majority of patients, they're coming in and say, I can't fit into bathing suits I want to fit into. I can't wear the type of dresses. I can't wear strapless dresses. So really, it's about changing their body in a way that allows them to wear the clothes like their friends do.
Yeah.
You know, for some, it's about confidence. You know, for some, it's about feeling more feminine. So there's a whole range of reasons, but I would say fitting into clothes tends to be one of the number one issues for patients.
So does it need to be a certain size to even qualify for a breast augmentation?
You see a wide variety of patients. We have patients who come in that are really thin. They have very little breast tissue, very little fatty tissue, and they're almost, you know, skin on bone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have patients who come in with really a substantial breast volume, but maybe the volume is not distributed the way they want to. So there's no sort of litmus test to say this is what makes you a patient or not. Really what it comes down to is, how are you presenting, and then how can we put together a plan to help you achieve the goal that you have in mind?
I know a lot of patients are wondering about what the recovery process is like, and is it going to be uncomfortable or painful?
Yeah. You know, it's different for everybody, but I would say in general, most patients are really pleasantly surprised by how well they do. They come in expecting a lot of discomfort, but, you know, these days we take a lot of steps to minimize patients' discomfort. You know, we use a lot of local anesthesia so that people wake up feeling really comfortable. People are sent home with a variety of either narcotic and non-narcotic medication. It's really become a huge emphasis in the last decade about, you know, patient comfort with procedures.
Would there be any scarring or any kind of nerve damage afterwards that they would need to be aware of?
So good question. So everybody thinks, I think there's this perception that in plastic surgery, we somehow magically do things without scars.
Yeah.
We don't have wands, we have scalpels, that's how it works. But what we do is we make a lot of effort in terms of planning the placement of those incisions to make them as invisible as possible. So, you know, if you were to get on a website like ours and look through our breast augmentation gallery, for a lot of those patients, you can't tell where the scars are. And quite frankly, we'll have patients who come in a year after surgery will say, okay, how did we do your surgery? Where's your scar? If we don't have a chance to read the chart in advance, because the scars can heal really well. So I think that like anything, you know, if you plan well, you can have nice camouflage scars. Then there's steps that we take. You know, we use silicone and a lot of other products to try to mitigate the impact of scars, but there's always scar. The other question you asked was about nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime we enter tissue, we're going through nerves to some degree. Now, we have a sense of where those nerves are running, but everybody's anatomy is different from person to person. We take a lot of steps to try to avoid direct nerve injury, especially when we can see them. And we use maneuvers to try to mitigate nerve damage. But I would say for the question that this ends up usually leading to is nipple sensation. So patients will ask, if I have implants placed, will I still be able to have nipple sensation? And for the vast majority of patients, you know, it can be absolutely normal. Mm-hmm. People have said that the average patient keeps about 75% of normal of their nipple sensation. But for some, it's totally normal afterwards. So again, you see a wide range of impacts from surgery, but you know, it's one of those things we paid a lot of attention to so that patients can feel, not only look better, but feel good too.
Thanks for joining us for this special Best of Dr. West episode of Care Experts.
All of our featured care experts recommend and accept the Care Credit credit card. For more information, visit carecredit.com.
Thanks for joining us on Care Experts with Care Credit. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share with friends and family. And stay tuned for new episodes every week.
All information, opinions, and recommendations discussed in this episode are for your information only. We believe the information sources are generally reliable, but because of possible human or mechanical error by the sources, Synchrony or its affiliates, including Care Credit, does not provide warranty to the accuracy, quality, or completeness of the information or any results obtained from it. Any statement or opinions in this episode are the doctor's alone, and included data was current to the time of creating this episode. Please consult your own advisors before using any of this information.